You're listening to a podcast by the United Nations Research Institute for Social Development.
Now, I'd like to turn to our third speaker, Lynn Ossum, who's going to take us to a very different context where she's been doing field research in Ethiopia, looking at the dynamics of social and solidarity economy among women workers in the informal economy there, and looking at the political challenges within a context where the state seems to have a very strong presence. Lynn, you have 15 minutes.
This work is based on research I've been doing in Ethiopia, particularly in Addis Ababa, among women working in the informal sector. The research was focused around women's organizations, women's NGOs, with local community links. And essentially, I'm trying to understand the ways in which women's organizations, women's NGOs are organizing these local community groups who are mainly working in the informal sector, the way in which they're being organized around savings and credit cooperative societies, and the potential for potential to expand SSE through this through SACOs. I'll just use the terminology SACO. And my basic argument is that SACOs in Ethiopia are being, because of the political conditions in Ethiopia and political economy per se, SACOs are being emerging in a very highly constricted political environment. And out of this, an equally circumscribed vision of women's empowerment and women's development is emerging. So the notion of empowerment that women's NGOs are sort of applying is restricted because of their own restrictions within the political context. And therefore, I see NGOs as an inefficient catalyst of change. And so essentially, I'm looking at the nexus of state, NGOs, and local communities, because in Ethiopia so far, the women's movement in itself is very, very, it's very recent. It has a very recent history of a women's movement as a political movement. And most of it has been carried through civil society action, through women's NGOs. And so there's still very much the sort of resistances we are seeing at the grassroots level is very much linked to the work of NGOs. And the main point of contradiction is a law. There's a law that has been in place in Ethiopia since 2008, the Charities and Societies the Charities and Societies Proclamation Law, which, and I'll explain more about this law later, which has severely restricted the work of non-governmental organizations and has inserted the state very strongly into as an antagonistic force with civil society, and affecting the ways in which civil society groups therefore work with the grassroots communities. And I have three main critiques. Conceptually, I'm looking at this question from... maybe I should use this. Okay. I'm looking at the question of autonomy as it relates to SSE. There's been a lot of talk about this in the last day and a half. And the fact that the work of women's organizations are very much the sort of deep links we see between women's organizations and the local grassroots communities, and the restrictions that are being placed on women's organizations by the state. And also the idea of, ideology and the way in which the language of rights. Again, there was a very interesting critique from the audience, a comment from the audience earlier around the question of rights as an individualistic concept. And I don't disagree, but I want to challenge you by saying I don't think rights in themselves are problematic. It is the way in which they are applied in liberal contexts, which really are very universalizing and have no concept of history, are apolitical, are acultural. And I want to argue that the CSP law is very much replacing the language of rights, which has been critical in the development of the women's movement of feminist theory, and replacing it with the notion of empowerment. And also alienation, the idea of alienation where through the actions of the state and the relationship of NGOs with the state, we are seeing a sort of divorce happening between women's, the structural basis of women's oppression or the dispossession of women, and the political basis. So there's women's work is being depoliticized in very instrumental ways. And so the objective, my overall objective is to critique the SACO approach as a means of expanding SSE in the context of the antagonistic state, the Ethiopian state, as we see it right now. And a bit of a context. Going back to 91 and the neoliberal turn, which was, swept across most African countries after the fall of the Mengistu government in 1991 and the rise of the Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Democratic Front. And IMF and World Bank emphasis on a new kind of state, a kind of state that emphasized capacity building and public works, information and communication training. And arguments have been made that this the emphasis was not as much to reduce the influence of the state as to sort of generate a state that could withstand the pressures of the market much better. And to quote what has been written somewhere, to create a state that would ensure conditions for people to act socially in market-conforming fashion. So the market still remains very much an emphasis, but we see a sort of reorientation of the state, the neoliberal state, with in a sort of social engineering that was going on. Of course, we know with a structural adjustment, the reduced public spending, in Addis Ababa, we see, anybody who's gone to Addis will know that it's the levels of poverty, both which is visible and invisible, is very it's staggering. And it didn't start in 1991, but it was aggravated. The levels of structural poverty definitely increased, and a growth of the informal sector. And it is possible to make feminist inferences, therefore, into the... in 1991, again, we see an increase in SACOs, in the savings cooperatives, an entrenchment of women in the informal sector. And, I read this as... one of capital's abilities. Capital has always been very able to generate its own labor, through this growth of the informal sector, and therefore the growth of, the emergence of SSE, of maybe not SSE but solidarity economies among women is not uncharacteristic. It's not something uncharacteristic, but something we should read as really constitutive of this neoliberal strain that we are seeing in the local communities. And so solidarity economies are both a form of resistance, but also a source of the growth of self-help groups, which I'll explain is part of the ways in which these circles are being organized, is also a source of contradiction. The contradiction of the neoliberal state, which, on the one hand, the self-help groups have sort of created a basis of autonomy for women, but they follow a very institutionalist, an institutionalist logic through the law, which sort of seeks to the legislation through the CSP law that I'm talking about earlier kind of contradicts the economies of autonomy that are supposed to be brought on through the self-help groups. And we recall, again, questions of micro-lending, which was part of, some of which was discussed yesterday, and the idea that, the idea that women, the pressure that comes in through micro-lending groups for repayment as sort of a compensation for the lack of collateral, the fact that women don't have to bring forth collateral. And another feminist critique is the idea of state feminism. And state feminism, which is the sort of ways in which feminists and women have accessed the state through formal mechanisms, through the women's machinery, through women's ministries, through women's... And the ways in which NGOs, through their mediation of local capital, are legitimizing a sort of restrictive form of state feminism. And the way in which the state itself has accessed grassroots communities through the women's machinery and the ways in which it is depoliticizing and de-radicalizing the woman question through this formal co-optation, silencing of gender demands through a discourse of protection, and sort of submerging the super exploitative relationships that continue away from a gender discourse, which would expose some of these oppressions. So the circles are organized from the local community through self-help groups, which have about 15 to 20 members, and that then there are cluster level associations, which incorporate about 6 to 8 self-help groups, and then there are federations, which are composed of about 11 cluster level associations, and these groups, the self-help groups, bring in women from a broad range of informal sector work, including women who are begging on the streets, have had a space to pull money together and save in this way. Certain observations I have is with regard to this modeling, which is very much replicating the structure of NGOs from within which the self-help groups are emerging. This a sort of hierarchized model. And I've had discussions yesterday regarding the federation. It's interesting to listen to Bina's work on the federation, which there is now a process to legislate and make these autonomous bodies from the NGOs, which might be a positive thing with regards to the limitations that NGOs have in relation to the state. But also it's important, I try to interrogate the recuperation of circles which were historically very unpopular in Ethiopia under the, they have existed for a long time under the imperial regime of Haile Selassie. We saw circles were promoted as a means to promote smallholder agriculture. This was a regime that was trying very much to retain legitimacy and was promoting agrarian practices. And the military regime, which had a socialist idea, was promoting, circles as a sort of tool for promoting this socialist economy. And the current government, the EPRDF, renewed or revived the circles, but under very circumscribed conditions of under neoliberalism, which saw a retreat of state and intensified competition. We also saw very modified forms of cooperatives. So we saw a lot of people moving out of cooperatives which they thought were not working and moving into. So there was a lot of movement and a lot of competition. And the state reaction has been quite reactionary, which is one of the things that has produced this CSP law, which is a law that is very strict, is criminalizing human rights activities, is funding restrictions, has introduced funding restrictions such that organizations working on women's rights cannot access more than 10% of their funding from overseas. And therefore, we've seen the restructuring of many women's organizations actually dividing themselves up and now starting to work on empowerment. If you drop the language of rights, then you can get as much money as you want inside the country and outside. Okay, 1 minute. and finally, just to The problematic nature of this restructuring under this law is that because of funding restrictions, we have seen a movement from donor dependence to private sector dependence. We have many NGOs now approaching private donors, whose aims might not be congruent with the aims that are being pushed by women's circles, and of course, who have interests that might dictate upon the work of women. The silencing of dissidents and weakened solidarity bases, which, again, looking at SSC as a question of essentially political negotiation, as a political question, the political question is being silenced, and this discursive shift of from the language of rights, which assumes that a lot of ethical questions have already been settled, questions of identity, democratic space. I'll stop there.
Okay, thank you, Lynn.
Check out our other podcasts available free on the iTunes Store. For more information, go to our website, www.unris.org. Thank you for listening.